Welcome to this week's Big Boat interview with me, Sophia Wilson. Today I sat down with Emma Bamford ahead of the release of her novel Deep Water, which will be on sale in the UK from July the 7th. Formerly Boats production editor, Emma has harnessed all of her yachting pedigree for her debut novel, which is based around a honeymoon couple that find themselves bareboat sailing to a paradisical island on the Indian Ocean. However, they soon discover that island life with five strangers is not quite as heavenly as planned and things take a more sinister turn. We discuss her inspiration for Deep Water, including how in her 30s, when she left her career in journalism and answered an internet advert to fly to the jungle in Borneo to live on a boat with a man she'd never met and his cat, and why yachting and adventure still captivates readers today. It's a great insight into the work and planning that goes on behind creating and writing a novel, so I hope you enjoy the interview. Emma, thank you so much for joining us today. It's very exciting to have you back in the Boat International office after a couple of years. Your debut novel, Deep Water, is about to hit the shelves in the UK. It's already just been released in the US. I was very fortunate to have a sneak preview and it's brilliant. I'm very conscious in this interview of not giving too much away, so maybe I'd better let you give a summary of the plot.
Yeah, thanks, Sophia. It's great to be back at the Boat International HQ in London. So my book's called Deep Water. It's my first novel. It's a thriller. And it opens in the Indian Ocean in the middle of the night, and there's a Navy vessel and it gets a distress call from a yacht. It goes to the yacht's aid, and on board the captain and crew find a badly injured man and his traumatised wife, and they transfer him onto the naval vessel. And the yacht's captain starts to question the wife about what's happened and where they've come from, and she confesses, "It's all my fault, I've killed them." And then the book then jumps back in time to basically discover what happened and meet the protagonists, Jake and Virginie, who are a British couple, and they've put all their life savings into a yacht and headed off on the adventure of a lifetime in the Indian Ocean.
And that idea of kind of quitting day-to-day life and heading off on a yacht might be a dream for some of our listeners, but I think most people would say it's kind of an unrealistic dream, or very few people did it. But you did actually do that, albeit in a slightly different context.
I did actually, yeah. It feels really bizarre now. But looking back, about 10 years ago, I was working as a journalist on the Independent newspaper, and I'd fallen in love with sailing. And I did this really crazy thing where I quit my job, I sold my car, I rented out my flat, and I answered an ad on the internet for Crew Wanted. And then I bought a one-way ticket to Borneo to live on a boat with a man I'd never met and his cat. And then I spent 2 or 3 years sailing around Southeast Asia, the Caribbean. I worked on a super yacht as a deckhand in the Mediterranean for a season. And had a lot of adventures at sea.
And how did those experiences kind of influence the novel? I guess, you know, as you say, the couple, you kind of hear about how they kind of sold everything up and ended up on this adventure. I guess there must have been a lot of kind of personal anecdotes in there for you for doing something similar.
Yeah, definitely. When I was away, I would find myself, so for example, on one boat, we were in the Andaman Islands, which are in the Indian Ocean. They're about 4 days sailing west of Thailand, really remote. And when I was on board, I really remember we were anchored off this deserted island, and it was like, you know, warm seas and palm trees and white sand. And it really got me thinking about paradise and why it is that people feel so compelled to do things like that, to set up their life and go bare boating, or, you know, for super yacht owners, say, to get their own boat and go and explore these places. So I wanted to delve into what paradise means and what the draw is for people. But I was also really lucky because I was able to draw on my own experience of character, boat, setting, location, sailing, weather, all those things that I experienced when I was on board to help me write the book.
And you did write a book about the experience of going to Borneo and the man and his cat. I actually haven't read that book. I need to go back and read it. But what actually happened in the end when you flew out there and you met him, and what was he like, and what were some of those experiences?
It was honestly the craziest thing I've ever done. I flew to the Malaysian part of Borneo, and I landed in the evening, and all I knew was to take a taxi to this police station in this village, and it was pitch black. My taxi driver didn't speak any English. Got to the police station, it was closed, and I called the skipper, the owner of the boat who I was going to be staying with, and he said, "Oh, just walk down this path and I'll come up and meet you." And I had all my stuff with me, and I was walking through this jungle, and there were bats swooping over my head, and it was completely dark, and I was just thinking, "Oh my God, what have I done?" But I'm still alive now, so it turned out all right in the end.
Yeah, what did your family and friends make of it when you suddenly announced you're off to Borneo?
Everyone thought I was completely crazy. It was quite out of character. I'd never done any, hadn't had a gap year or anything. I hadn't done any travelling. I'd been on holidays and to increasingly more far-flung places, but nothing like that. The most common question people asked me then, and people still ask me now when they hear about that book, is how did you know he wasn't a serial killer? Have you seen the movie Dead Calm? And I answer, you know, I did my due diligence. I emailed him and I asked him, "Are you a serial killer?" And he said no. And so I went with that.
Presumably also 10 years ago, there was probably less kind of social media stalking and other things that you could do.
Yeah, there was Facebook. So I did check him out on Facebook. I think maybe he might have had a MySpace page. I mean, that's how far back we're looking. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah. And it was much harder to communicate with people. We had Skype, really. But we'd be in places where there was no phone signal. So when I was away, it was hard to keep in touch with family and friends. And it was just a case of they'd hear from me as and when.
And are some of the characters involved in Deepwater based on some of the people you came across on those travels? I mean, we're kind of all used to those salty sea dog characters that we see around the place. But were there any that were kind of very specifically from your travels that you then kind of worked into the novel?
That's a really interesting question. They're probably, I wouldn't say there's a direct correlation between this person and that person. They're a mix of all different people that I met, but you're right. Yeah, there's a salty old sea dog. There's the young adventurous couple with stars in their eyes wanting to go off and explore the world. I met really interesting people when I was on my travels, people that I never would have met otherwise. And from all over the world. So the cast of characters in Deepwater ended up being a really international set. Australians, Canadians, Brazilians, Mozambicans, French and British, and a little dog as well. And when I was away, I met people that worked as divers and sailors. So I put some of that into the characters as well.
And you've obviously kind of done both sides. You've done the kind of more bare boat, living on board side of sailing. And then you obviously have had quite a lot to do with the super yacht community. How do you think the kind of two communities differ? Or are there a lot of similarities for that sort of love for the sea and get, as you say, that hunt for paradise?
I think, I mean, on the surface of it, some of the boats that I was living on when I was travelling and likewise boats that feature in deep water, very small, say 36 feet, limited facilities, obviously no crew. So that's really different maybe from from the super yacht kind of sailor. But I think you're right, like at heart, it's that want or drive to need to be close to nature and the sea and wanting to see parts of the world and have experiences that maybe other people haven't had and get away from it all. And I think, you know, that can apply whether you've got a little dinghy that you're taking up a river or you've got a super yacht and you're taking it out into the oceans.
And I guess what's interesting in the book, the kind of the people that go to this island form a sort of community and there's different nationalities and there's different people involved. Did you see that on your travels that, you know, if you ended up somewhere that was quite remote, all the different boats did speak to each other and did share things and did try and help each other?
Yeah, I remember in the Bahamas, when I sailed through there, there was very much that community. I've never seen anything like it. There was probably 100, 150 yachts at anchor. And some of those people were there on a near permanent basis. And it was like being moving into a neighbourhood. You know, like people came by in their dinghies to say hi and introduce themselves. And then they told us that there was a bonfire with a sing-along happening on the beach that evening, and we were invited, and people asking us if we needed anything or if we wanted any advice on where we could get supplies. So I think like-minded people will come together in a community. But the flip side of that, what I explore a bit in deep water, is when you've got a really small community like that, if there is any friction between people, it's kind of like bubbling away in a cauldron, and it can lead to some explosions, basically.
Yeah, and you mentioned you did a season as Super Yacht Crew. I guess that's a similar kind of environment where it's a very small collection of people, and those tensions can get out of hand.
Yeah, very much so.
As Below Deck has shown us all. And a majority of the novel, as we say, is set on the island of Amarante. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Amarante.
I've read that wrong in my head the whole way through the book. Was that based specifically on somewhere you'd visited, or was it kind of just more generally off some of those islands that you saw in Southeast Asia?
So it's a mix of two. So I wanted it, when I was away travelling, I met some people who were like old soaks, and in the 70s they used to go to the Chagos Islands, which are right in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and they would go there and they would kind of be self-sufficient and live there on their yachts for several months. So that was my inspiration for Amarante, but I haven't been to the Chagos Islands because they are leased by the UK to the States as a military base, although yachts can go there. But when I was in the Andaman Islands, I came across there are some old ruins there, and also the remains, which is now sort of museum, of a prison, because it was used as a penal colony. So it's kind of a mix. Amarante is a mix of the Chagos Islands, the Andaman Islands, and the Seychelles, where I've also sailed.
And do you think, you've obviously done kind of Southeast Asia, quite a lot of time in the Caribbean as well. From your experience, do you think Southeast Asia still allows sailors that opportunity to really get fully off the beaten track, potentially more than someone like the Caribbean or the Bahamas does?
Absolutely. I mean, we would go several days without seeing another boat. And I think sometimes it depends on how good your information is and the research that you or your crew have done. So, for example, we were in Thailand and we were at Koh Phi Phi, and one of the islands there is the island that they filmed the movie The Beach at, and it's a real tourist trap, and the tourist boats coming in and out all the day. It's really, really busy. And we went at the end, we got a tip off that if you go at the end of the day, then it's deserted and you have the place to yourself. So that's what we did, and we spent the night there. We were able to, because we're on a catamaran, we were able to use one of the moorings, and we just, you know, stayed in this absolutely beautiful beach and had it all to ourselves. Whereas if we'd gone at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it would have been a very different story. And I think, you know, Southeast Asia is massive. Think of how many islands there are in Indonesia, you've got Malaysia and Thailand, and then into the Indian Ocean. So you can definitely get really far off the beaten track.
And is there anywhere that you'd particularly like to go back to, or anywhere that you haven't explored on board that you'd like to, maybe without the kind of sinister undertones of your novel? Maybe you never want to be near a beach again. But
it might be nice to just go somewhere and have a really relaxing, fun time. When I was covering for you at Boat International, I was really lucky in that I got to go up to the Scottish Highlands with EOS on Hansa Explorer. And that made me think, well, there were other people on board, our guide and also another journalist who was on board, who'd been to Antarctica. And I was so envious of their stories of going there by boat. So I'd love to do that. I'd love to do high latitudes, maybe go to Greenland. But there's so many places. I mean, I'd love to go back to some of the places that I visited on my travel. Sri Lanka was a real highlight for me. Such a fascinating country. It's really small. And within the space of a day, you can be up in the mountains at the top where they grow tea, where it's kind of cold and rainy, and you can see like the heritage of that industry. And then you can drive down to the coast, and you can be surfing on the beach in the evening. I really liked Sri Lanka. The people were so friendly and welcoming. yeah, so many places, really. Where don't I want to go? Australia? I'm always envious of your trip to the Kimberley as well.
Yeah, that was incredible. That still stands out as a real... Whenever people ask me where's the most amazing place you've been, I think the Kimberley has to be up there. Because similarly, we just didn't see any other boats or any other human life for kind of 3-4 days at one stage. And that is quite unique. I think these days that's actually quite a unique experience to have, particularly on the water.
Yeah. I would also, in the Med, I love Greece, so... And there are so many islands there to visit. So I'd love to sail more around the Med. One place I really love was the Aeolian Islands between Italy and Sicily. And there are 7 or 8 islands there. And one of them is a live volcano that you can hike up to the top of and see it exploding. Is that the right word? Erupting.
Erupting.
At night, which is quite spectacular. Yeah, I'd love to go back there. It's just not enough time, basically.
And how long... You know, obviously now the book, well, I've seen a preview of the book, it's out. It kind of feels to me like it's come together quite quickly, but I'm sure it doesn't feel like that for you. When did the idea of the novel first come to you, and how long has the kind of whole process taken since you left us at boat? Or you were working on it while you were at boat as well, weren't
you? I was, yeah, on my lunch times and my commute in from the office. I first had the idea probably about 10 years ago. And I wrote a few pages, I think the prologue, and then I put it away because I was busy working, and I wrote my two travel memoirs, which are called Casting Off and Untie the Lines. And then this story sort of wouldn't go away, this idea of this couple going to this really, really remote island and what happened to them. So I came back to it probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And then I was working at boat, and I was offered a place at the University of East Anglia to do their creative writing master's degree, so that's why I left you guys, and off I went at the age of 40 to be a student again, which was an entirely different kind of adventure, but that was really good because it gave me the time to work on the novel when I was there, and I rewrote it loads of different times. And then when COVID hit, I thought as a kind of distraction, I'll just see if I can get a literary agent and see if anyone's interested in publishing this book. So that's what I did. And I was very lucky that Simon & Schuster, both in the UK and America, took it on board, if you'll excuse the pun. And so since then we've been reworking it. I'm not sure I realise how many, despite working in newspapers and magazines all my life, how many drafts a novel goes through, from first idea to actual publication. So the past 2 years have been really busy reworking it. And now it's done, it's printed. Copies have arrived in the office in New York and should be on the bookshelves soon.
And how much has the kind of original story changed from what you first had in mind? I mean, again, without giving too much away, but has the plot changed a lot, or is it just kind of little tweaks and little kind of timing and suspension and things that get added in through the drafts?
I did probably 4 very different endings, and I told my agent that and my publisher after they'd accepted it as it was, and they said, oh wow, maybe there's something we can do with that. I was like, no, these endings have never seen the light of day. There's a reason why they are not the actual ending of the book now. So the structure, it's kind of you've got the main story of the couple on the island, and then there's a frame around it, which is a present day story. So the frame was a later addition, but the actual core story about Jake and Virginie and why they went to this island and what happened to them when they were there, that's been there from the start.
Did you always have their names? Did you always have, can you kind of picture them? And I mean, I have a really strong picture of what they look like in my head, which I don't want to tell you because it's probably nothing like what they look like in your head. But did you always have a really strong sense of who the couple were, or did that shift around a little bit?
Virginie, yes. I wanted her to be half French and half English. I wanted her to be adventurous, and I wanted her to be the one that kind of leads the decision for them to go to Amarante. But Jake changed quite a lot. He used to have a different name. He used to have a completely different job. He used to have different hair colour even. And he just got, he got cooler as I went through. He was quite, he was an office boy to begin with, and a bit of a dweeb. And I'd like to think he's become more kind of manly and salt of the earth.
Yeah, hardy would be how I'd...
Hardy, yeah, that's a good word.
That's, yeah, that'd be the word I'd associate with him. And there's obviously quite a lot of kind of technical lexicon and sailing terms and, the Navy ship and things. I mean, I've never been on a Navy ship, but I kind of get the impression that it's all completely factually correct. Did you have to do a lot of research around that as to how, particularly on the Navy side, how that worked?
People always say that when you write your first novel, you write what you know. So I suppose I was quite lucky in that I'd done a lot of the research up front by living it myself. But yeah, there were loads of things that when I came to write the book, I didn't know. I needed to know how engines worked on yachts. I needed to know what the epaulettes are like on the uniform of a Malaysian naval officer. I needed to know the structure of the Malaysian police. So, I did have to do quite a lot of research. Marilyn Moa helped me with a couple of questions I had about bigger boats. And then I remember there's a scene with a spear gun. And I Googled shops in the UK that sell spear guns. And I sent an email in asking them if they could describe the sound a spear gun would make if it was fired in the air rather than in the water. So like really, really odd things like that.
You're definitely on a list somewhere with Hampshire police. It definitely got concerns about what you're up to. And what do you think was the most challenging part of writing the novel, of kind of getting it to this stage?
Keeping going. A novel is about 90 or 100,000 words. And so it's not only the time taken to get all that down, it's also holding something that massive in your head is, I find, really difficult. And I had to come up with all kinds of tricks to try and help me do that. Coloured post-it notes, printing things off, not printing things off, breaking it down into scenes, putting it back together again. Just having the faith, I think. That's quite hard, having the faith to continue and keep going and keep pushing until you think it's, as good as you can get it, and then seeking outside help.
And what advice would you have to anyone who's planning on writing a novel, nautical or otherwise?
Anyone who's writing a novel. I would say just enjoy the process. It is a massive job to write and complete a novel. And if you're not enjoying it, I don't really see what the point would be. So just relax as much as you can. Read a lot. Read in the genre that you're writing in, and kind of read with a critical eye so you can see how other writers have managed to do the things that they've done in terms of structure and character and plotting and that kind of thing. And then just let go. Let go and write and keep going and see what you come up with, because there are so many drafts that you have to do and keep going through it that if there are any mistakes, doesn't matter, you can sort them out later.
And you're now working on your second novel. Is it a sequel or it's a whole new story?
No, it's going to be another thriller. It's a standalone. The working title is Eye of the Beholder. And I was quite conscious that I'd written three books about sailing and I didn't want to be typecast. So this time it's set nowhere near the sea. It's set in the Highlands of Scotland, and it's about a ghostwriter who gets a commission to write a book, the memoirs of a renowned cosmetic surgeon. And it explores the idea of the female gaze and beauty and Botox and fillers and why that industry has taken off.
Quite a long way from sailing and superyachts.
Massively, but who knows? I'll probably come back to things that I know a bit better in the future.
Yeah, a bit more research required for this one.
Definitely.
A lot of research. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Deepwater will be on the shelves in the UK from...
July the 7th.
July the 7th. And it's got a wave on the front, so you can't miss it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat Interview, which has been mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.